OILEOIL.com. I'm Rick Ganley. This is NHPR News.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The wrangling continues in Washington over whether to, once again, extend benefits to the nation's long-term unemployed. When the recession first hit, then-President Bush stretched the length of time jobless Americans could receive those checks beyond the usual 26 weeks, and President Obama continued the practice with the approval of Congress. But the end of last year, those extensions stopped as part of a compromise budget deal. The program had cost the government a lot, more than $250 billion over the past 5 years. Also, some Republicans saw the continued renewal of benefits as a disincentive for job seekers to get out and pound the pavement. Meanwhile, Democrats, who signed on to the budget deal, are now trying to get unemployment insurance extended again with separate legislation, arguing it'll help both struggling individuals and the broader economy. Today in The Exchange, understanding long-term unemployment, what the circumstances are for these Americans, and the debate over how best to help them. Have you struggled with long-term unemployment in the past or right now? What are your concerns? Are you an employer? Do you have jobs that need to be filled? And what's your take on this long-term unemployment issue? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, all one word. We have two guests. Joining us from D.C. is Alex Brill, research fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. He was an advisor on tax policy to the Simpson-Bowles Commission and was a senior advisor and chief economist to the House Ways and Means Committee. And Alex Brill, it's great to have you. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Also joining us from Boston, William Dickens, professor and chair of the Department of Economics at Northeastern University, specializing in labor markets, wage determination, and unemployment. He's also a non-resident senior fellow at the Brookings Institution Economic Studies Program. And Professor Dickens, thank you also for being with us.
My pleasure.
Well, and I want to start with you, Professor Dickens, if we could just get a couple definitions out of the way. First of all, what's long-term unemployed? How long are we talking about?
In the United States, we typically define it as people who have been unemployed for more than 6 months, which is the length of time that normal unemployment benefits are available for.
So normal unemployment benefits are available from the states, right, Professor Dickens, for that 26 weeks?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Although it's a federal program that's operated by the states.
And then typically, not recession yet, let's not talk about that yet, but typically what happens once that 6 months runs out?
Typically, just before the 6 months runs out, there is a frenzy of job seeking. We see a big bump in the number of people who find jobs, and also we see that some employers who have laid workers off will rehire them right at that point when their unemployment benefits are about to run out. And then after that, the unemployment benefits run out, and people who are still unemployed have to avail themselves of other programs such as food stamps, or in the case of a family, temporary assistance to needy families.
All right. And I know we're not in a typical situation now. We'll talk about that in just a minute. But Alex Brill, who tends to be in this group of long-term unemployed? Is there a demographic profile or is it everyone?
It's a fairly diverse group. It includes people with relatively short work histories, people with long work histories, obviously men and women, people across the education spectrum. I think the data indicates that it tends to include people who tend to have slightly less education than those who are employed, but I think the more important takeaway is that you can't describe these people in any single form or fashion. There are long-term unemployed across every demographic characteristic.
And Professor Dickens, are there certain types of industries where you tend to see more long-term unemployed folks?
Not at the moment.
Really? So your take also on the demographics of this, Professor Dickens?
Dr. Brill did an excellent job of summarizing it. There's a slight tendency for people with less job experience and who are less educated, and also older people to some extent to fall into the group of long-term unemployed.
So you mentioned, Professor Dickens, you know, what happens typically, and you hinted that right now we're not in a typical situation. How is now, Professor Dickens, and Alex, I want to hear from you too, obviously, but Professor Dickens, you first, how is now not typical with what we've seen?
Well, the main thing is that because the economy has been in a depressed state of time for so long, we've have a buildup of long-term unemployed, large buildup of long-term unemployed. The United States has been very lucky in the post-World War II period that there really we just haven't had much experience with long-term unemployment. Typically, only a few percentages of the all unemployed people are long-term unemployed, but in this recession we've been up to as high as 50% of the unemployed being long-term unemployed, and now it's down around 30-something.
So still, is that still high,
30%? That's still very high.
Alex, what's your take on all the attention to the long-term unemployed this time around?
Well, this is, the in my opinion, the greatest single labor market challenge that we're facing in our economy today and that we've faced in probably the past few decades. Just as was described, that both the absolute number of long-term unemployed and the share of those who are unemployed who are long-term unemployed are at levels that we've never seen before, and we've been at those levels for a longer period than we've ever experienced anything like this in the past. There are, you know, in the last survey, 3.6 million. It's tended to be around 4 million in recent months, long-term unemployed individuals in the U.S. economy, people who've been out of work and looking for work for 6 months or more. And this is a really serious problem, without question, and greater than any other labor market challenge we face.
Okay, so obviously the big question, Alex, is why more people in this long-term unemployed group staying out of work longer than we've seen before? How come, Alex? What do you think?
Well, there are a couple of issues going on. First of all, obviously, we had a very serious and severe economic recession, financial crisis, and an ensuing recession that caused a lot of employers to contract significantly, pushing people out of the workforce. And the recovery to that recession has been slow. In addition, for those who are unemployed, if you're unemployed for a short period of time, it can be very difficult. It can be painful and uncomfortable to get back to work and find a new job, a new employer. It can be burdensome as your income drops. That's if you're short-term unemployed. If you're long-term unemployed, the consequences are far more greater, far more serious. And in particular, it appears to be very difficult to get back to work. There's a stigma, unfortunately, often attributed with those who are long-term unemployed, and employers seem less willing to hire someone who has such a long gap in their employment. And so there's a little bit of more than a little bit, really, of a risk of a spiral effect where people who are unemployed for a long period of time will then remain have an even more difficult chance to get back to work. And these problems are compounding on one another.
Yeah, the stigma of long-term unemployment. And Professor Dickens, I know one of your graduate students got a lot of attention for some work he did on that. But first of
yes,
all, to
did.
You too, yeah, and we'll definitely talk about that. But Professor Dickens, the why, okay? So Alex said this is the greatest single labor market challenge we face. More people long-term unemployed, out of work for longer periods of time. How come?
I don't have any argument with what Alex said. We have had a very protracted economic slowdown, or initially a very severe downturn, and then a very, very slow recovery. And what that allows, so in the past, what's always happened in the United States is we have been very proactive with policy, so that we have come in with lower interest rates and often increased government spending to offset the loss of private sector demand and to stimulate private sector demand, and that's got us back on track much, much quicker. So that we haven't had a chance to build up this overhang of long-term unemployment, which is difficult to get rid of for the reasons Alex said. This time, I would argue that we just haven't been aggressive enough with policy in the period immediately after the recession and since then, and that without that, we are experiencing this long, protracted period of very slow growth, and we've allowed ourselves to build up this overhang of long-term unemployment.
So what kind of policies are you talking about? More stimulus a la Obama stimulus package, Professor?
Well, yeah, I can go back to January of 2009, and I have a PowerPoint that I used for a series of talks that I gave back then, arguing that the stimulus was far too small and that we would not expect to get a full recovery without that. I'm also on the record from that period saying that it would be a very, very long and slow recovery without more economic stimulus. The Federal Reserve did pretty much everything that it possibly could, lowering interest rates to zero and undertaking the series of special policies like the quantitative easing and the buying of mortgage-backed securities that was part of that program, but that wasn't enough by itself. We needed more, and we didn't get it.
Alex, what do you think? Better policies would have better attacked this problem of long-term unemployment?
Well, better policies, perhaps. I disagree with Professor Dickinson's view that we were short-sighted or shortcoming in the magnitude of the stimulus bill, and that was the cause for us not coming out of this recession in a more robust way. It's a but-for question. I mean, we will never know for sure. We never had a stimulus bill anywhere near the size that we had in 2009. Of course, we hadn't had a recession like we had in that period of time either. We also dramatically increased the unemployment benefits. Not only did we extend the benefits beginning at the end of 2008 from the traditional 26 weeks, but we extended them to levels that we've never seen before, up to 99 weeks in many states for a long period of time. And yet we were never able to robustly climb out of the recession in a meaningful way. In my view, if we had pursued a larger stimulus package, we would have run into more of the types of challenges that we saw, which is difficulties with getting the dollars out the door. There's only so quickly that the government can ramp up its federal spending, and that's a natural issue that holds back any stimulus program.
More conversation about long-term unemployment, how to tackle it. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 919. Good morning. Sign up your team for NHPR's second annual Trivia Smackdown. Flex your memory for minutia, and maybe you could be this year's champ. Spaces fill up quickly, so visit NHPR.org now to enter your team. This event made possible in part by NEEPCO. More on understanding long-term unemployment on The Exchange, then a 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, what clinics, CVS, Walgreens, and other retail outlets mean for patients and doctors. New Hampshire weather, partly sunny this morning, then clouding up this afternoon, highs upper teens, mid-20s. Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from Froling Energy, providing and installing high-efficiency wood pellet and wood chip boilers for commercial and institutional space heating, online at frolingenergy.com. And from Dartmouth Hitchcock, primary care doctors and nurses who put you at the center of health, 13 locations statewide, information at d-hdocs.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at long-term unemployment and the debate over how best to help this group of Americans. Have you struggled with this issue yourself in the past or right now? What are your concerns? If you're an employer, do you have jobs that you need to fill? What's your take on this long-term unemployment issue? 1-800-892-6477 is The Exchange number. 1-800-892-6477. 892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. Post a comment on our Facebook page if you'd like. Our guests from Washington, Alex Brill, Research Fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, and from Boston, William Dickens, Professor and Chair of the Department of Economics at Northeastern University. And gentlemen, let's go to our listeners now. And Cheryl's calling from Bradford. Hi, Cheryl. You're on the air. Go ahead.
How are you?
Fine.
Yes, I wanted to comment about the unemployment and how it's affecting municipalities. What we're seeing in the municipalities is that a lot of the older generation, I want to say 50 years and up, are what we're seeing is a lot of layoffs and a lot of firing. And I believe that from what I'm seeing, it, these workers are more costly to the employers, and they're shifting these people out and shifting them to the municipalities. And then, of course, when they come to municipalities, they apply for welfare assistance, and we shift them back to the state for cash assistance, Medicaid if applicable, and old age assistance, again, if it's applicable.
So public costs of long-term unemployment. Yeah. Cheryl, thank you very much for calling in. And Alex, I'll turn to you first on that. Go ahead. That there is a cost to public dollars for the long-term unemployed and their struggles.
Sure. No question. There's obviously there's the cost of the programs that we've been discussing earlier in the meeting. The unemployment insurance benefits themselves. But for those who either are not eligible for unemployment insurance benefits or who exhaust their benefits, many are required to turn to the state or local governments for additional programs. And those programs obviously have costs as well. And the caller described what those programs can be. And so the solution is never going to be, from a budget perspective, just to not have unemployment insurance, because that's just going to shift the burden elsewhere on the program. The solution is going to be, what kind of programs can we design that's going to help people get back to work?
You know, I'm interested, too, Professor Dickens, in what Cheryl says about she's seen in her town. She sees long-term unemployment more among older workers, suspecting perhaps that they cost companies more money and that's why they are getting laid off.
Well, it's true that there's a tilt towards older workers and younger workers who are less experienced among the long-term unemployed. But again, I want to stress that overall the long-term unemployed are not any particular demographic group. It can happen to anybody.
Thanks, Cheryl, for the call. And let's take another one, if we could. This is Glenn in North Woodstock. Hi, Glenn. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Go ahead, Glenn.
As an employer, I get a little frustrated with the issue on long-term unemployment. We run across people that, rather than take the job that's offered, they want to stay on the long-term unemployment and collect cash for certain, for their work under the table. So I don't know how the system addresses that.
So, Glenn, you're an employer, and your concern is that you see people who would rather stay on unemployment than go to work. Is that what you're saying? Yeah. And as an employer, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Do you look at two resumes side by side, and if you see somebody who's been long-term unemployed versus someone who's only been unemployed for, a month or so, do you look more favorably on that person who's only been out of work for a month? Because we hear about stigma.
No, I think that they should, I think you have to take it to the next level, and maybe there's a reason why, they're long-term unemployed. Maybe they had to cross-train in their industry, or they had a family emergency.
Right.
Or some people just get to a midlife point, they need a little break as well.
Well, Glenn, thanks a lot for calling in. It's good to hear from an employer, because you're definitely a big part of this as well. Alex Brill, you've written about what he talks about, the concern that extending benefits too much makes it easier for people to stay on unemployment. That's the concern that our caller raises. What do you think, Alex?
Yeah, that's right. So the traditional program, the 26-week program, is very effective in helping people through the transition in a normal economy go from unemployment to reemployment. In particular, the unemployment insurance program can serve a very useful function in helping people make sure that they don't necessarily rush out to the very first job that they find, because that first job that they get offered might not be the best fit for them. So the unemployment insurance program can help them make sure that they complete their search appropriately and find the best job for them. But that function that the unemployment insurance benefit program provides starts to break down in its effectiveness over long periods of time. And so when you have a program that runs not for 26 weeks, but for 52, 72, 81, 99 weeks in some instances, we've gone past this optimal search question and we're really just, in many cases, not all cases, but in some cases, elongating the duration of unemployment. And we're not doing it in a particularly kind way either, because the benefits that one receives when they're on unemployment insurance are significantly less than they earn when they're working. And so people are being they're being provided roughly half of the benefits that they would otherwise be provided. What we know from some of the evidence is that as an individual reaches the end of their unemployment benefits, their search intensity can increase significantly as they start to look back for jobs.
Sure, and this is the big debate on Capitol Hill. You know, how long you extend these, at what point does it become a disincentive? And I know you've written about that, Alex. And Professor Dickens, I know you've looked at this too. What do you think?
Well, first of all, I would be dead set against an extended unemployment benefit program during normal times for exactly the reasons that Dr. Brill cites. When we look across countries, we see that, in fact, duration of unemployment benefits is a strong correlate of really long-term persistent unemployment. But as a temporary measure, when we're in a situation like we are now, let me just cite a couple of figures here. In 2006, which was a relatively normal year, the number of job openings per unemployed person, I'm sorry, the number of unemployed people per job opening was 1.5. Right now it's 2.6. That's 2.5 people chasing every available job. But that's not the end of the story, because something that's been happening a lot recently is that people have been giving up and leaving the labor force. And if we count those people who say that they would take a job if a job was available, then we're up to 3.2 people looking for jobs for every job that's currently available. And if we add in the involuntarily part-time, then we're looking at 5 people per every job that's not available. Compare that to what it was in 2006, when there were only three people who were either unemployed, out of the labor force, or involuntarily part-time, who were to the ratio to each available job. We're in a very unusual time, and at this point, we can't really expect that increasing search intensity is going to do very much when there are so few jobs per worker. We can make people search all they want, but when there just aren't enough jobs available, it doesn't have much of an effect. In fact, we have some evidence on that now. Another student of mine who is looking at what happened when North Carolina cut off its long-term unemployment benefits this summer, he's found that there's some evidence that maybe it's not statistically significant, which means that our confidence bounds on the estimates are such that we can't rule out even a negative change in employment, but there was a small increase in employment. But by a 4-to-1 margin, what happened was that people gave up looking for work. You're required to continue looking for work to get unemployment benefits, so people have to look for work while they're unemployed. And what we see is that overwhelmingly in this environment, what happens when you cut off people's unemployment benefits is they just give up and wait for the economy to get better. So I really don't think that in this circumstance, cutting off unemployment benefits provides much in the way of incentives to increase employment.
So they go on public assistance, like our caller Cheryl from Bradford said? Is that what you're saying, Professor Dickens?
Or rely on family, because the people who for whom public assistance is available are a pretty limited group, and the amount of assistance available to someone who isn't supporting a family is very limited, and public assistance itself, most of the program, well, not the programs other than the food programs and health care programs, are limited in the amount of time that they're available for.
What do you think, Alex? So this is the big question, isn't it? You know, does the cutoff of unemployment benefits push people to look harder or discourage people to the point where they give up?
Yeah, this is really the heart of the question. In my view, the policy debate is not a binary, should not be at least, a binary choice between extending the program that expired last December and not extending the program. That has been the political debate. The program, it did expire, and there's been multiple attempts in Congress to bring it back. But that binary choice, I think, is what's leaving long-term unemployed workers really in the lurch. The question in my mind is not that. It's really what is the best way to help these people get back to work. And so we could reimpose the program, and that would, without question, provide benefits to those who as of January 1st, lost those benefits. My view is that the labor market is in such a bad condition, particularly for these workers, that we need to find alternative programs that are better suited for helping these people, not helping sustain them for these long, long periods of time when job openings per unemployed are 3-to-1, 4-to-1, or 5-to-1, but help them get the skills that they need to get back to work, get to the location that they need to live in order to be able to find a job, and help them in more fundamental ways.
So training and so forth, Alex.
Yeah, and so exactly. That would be certainly one of the options. Unfortunately, you know, the options are difficult. There's no simple or obvious solution that will help these 3.6 million people get back to work. First and foremost, there is no single solution to this problem. Because those who are long-term unemployed are such a diverse group, we would need to take a multifaceted approach. Different people are going to need different types of solutions.
Sure, and if you live in New England and, you know, all the jobs are out west, well, you don't want to move out west. You know, you want to stay in your house with your family and so forth. So easier said.
Although there's very little evidence that that's true.
That what's true, Professor Dickens?
That there is a mismatch between where workers are located
really?
and where the jobs are. Yeah, that was some of the work that was done by my graduate student. Is he broke down the unemployment by location, industry, and what you find is that universally, you know, with a very few exceptions. And I'll get to those in a second. That there just isn't any mismatch. These ratios of workers to open jobs are pretty much the same everywhere. I mean, they vary some, but they're still high everywhere. The only place where you find a few jobs available and compared to the total number of people looking for work are in boom towns, for example, where they're doing development of shale oil and things
North
like
Dakota.
That.
Yeah.
Shale gas, yeah. And so overall, there just isn't a number of people have looked at this, and there just isn't much evidence for mismatch being the cause of the current high levels of unemployment.
Alex, did you want to jump in there too?
Well, I would just say, I mean, I think that supports my view that there's not a single solution to this problem. So I think that there may be in some instances some mismatch. There are boom towns and there are similarly areas in the United States with particularly high unemployment rates. But if we address that issue, we would not solve the problem.
Again, the number here in the exchange for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. What do you think about this question of unemployment benefits? Does the extension of the loss of benefits push people to look harder, or does it make them give up, as we're talking about? Also, as we look at the issue of stigma and whether there is a stigma when it comes to long-term unemployment, we'd love to hear your own experiences, either as a job seeker or an employer. 1-800-892-6477 is the number. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And to the issue of stigma, Professor Dickens, I'm going to you first because, again, one of your graduate students did some pretty groundbreaking work on this issue. The idea that the longer you are out of the workforce, the more potential employers look at you with a hairy eyeball.
Yep.
What did you find?
What did he find? What he found was what you just said, which is that if you take two different people, one of whom has a great deal of experience in exactly the type of job that's available, and another person who has good work experience, but in another industry. So that both of them are pretty good-looking workers when they first become unemployed after 1 month. He made up fictional resumes for these people, and actually a whole bunch of people with roughly the similar characteristics, but distinguished in this way of either having experience that was directly matched to the job or not. And what he found was that over the first couple of months of being unemployed, when he sent out the resumes that had people not employed for those 2 months or so, that they typically would get something like, they'd have to send out something on the order of six resumes for the experienced people to get one job interview, or 11 resumes to get one job interview for the people who didn't have the experience. And that slowly declined over the first 6 months of time. Then what happened is at 7 months, when the people had been unemployed for 7 months, there was an extraordinarily abrupt drop, both for those who were experienced and those who were inexperienced. So that for the experienced workers, it dropped at 7 months to 29 resumes per interview, and for the non-experienced, 50 resumes per interview. And there were few enough people, there were few enough job interviews that were received for these fictional people that, in fact, we couldn't statistically distinguish between those. And by 8 months or so, basically nobody's getting any job interviews in response to the resumes that are being sent out.
So you do think that there's a computer program that is doing this, you know, and that the program automatically says after 6 months, you know, dump this one in the trash? Or is it people doing this?
My graduate student has talked to the people who program those.
Yeah, I've heard that it's done a lot by machine these days. Go ahead.
Yeah, so he tells a story of how he would be working late at night sending out these resumes, and he would send out a batch of 100 resumes and watch as 50 of them would come back within seconds.
Wow, late at night.
Yeah.
So clearly somebody in HR isn't working at 11 o'clock at night. There's a computer sort of running through the algorithms or whatever and automatically rejecting people who'd been unemployed for 6 months or more.
Yep. And one of the solutions that we might apply in this situation is something that the president has already done. In fact, my graduate student was invited to the White House and took part in a meeting between the president and a number of CEOs of major corporations, including Walmart, where the president urged them not to use those sorts of programs, or at least not to throw out the resumes of people who have been unemployed for more than 6 months. During normal times, it's probably the case that somebody who's been unemployed for 6 months, unless they have a story like the gentleman who called in, who was an employer himself, said that that they've been through a whole bunch of interviews and nobody else has wanted to hire them, so you think, well, why should I want to hire them? But in a time like this, when you have to send in so many resumes to even get one job interview, even when you're very experienced, it's possible for very good workers to slip through the cracks even beyond 6 months. And so this is a time period when employers probably ought to be looking at those long-term workers. And if they don't, then there's no way to put them back to work. The only other way to get them to do that would be to heat the economy up. So,
and Professor Dickens, I got to jump in there for
just
a moment. More on the long-term unemployed coming up. Stay with us.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 939. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, what clinics at CVS, Walgreens, and other retail outlets mean for patients and doctors. Then a woman struggled to rebuild her life after a traumatic brain injury erased decades of memories. All coming up on the Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. New Hampshire weather, partly sunny this morning, then clouding up this afternoon. High temperatures upper teens to the mid-20s. Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from Liberty Utilities, sponsors of button-up energy-saving workshops, including one at the Salem Boys and Girls Club on February 25th. Details at myenergyplan.net/button-up. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, the first of a two-part series on the teaching profession, with a look at how we educate our educators. here in New Hampshire. Join us for that conversation tomorrow. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at the struggles of the long-term unemployed post-recession in this country, the best ways to help this group of people who've been struggling to find work. If this is your struggle, let's hear from you. Have you been dealing with long-term unemployment? What do you think about the issue of extending benefits or not? What about this stigma issue that our guests are talking about? Have you faced that yourself? Also, from the employer angle, we'd love to hear your comments and thoughts on this issue of long-term unemployment, what it'll take to get these folks back in the workforce. The number 1-800-892-6477, email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. And Alex Brill, Professor Dickens, let's go right back to our listeners. And Elizabeth's calling from Jaffrey. Hi, Elizabeth, you're on The Exchange. Go ahead.
Hi. I worked for a private family for 7 years, taking care of elderly parents. And when the woman died, I went out looking for work. And, you know, I was 7 years older, 54. And it was a whole new world. I mean, I have 12 years home health care experience, and it was really difficult. I actually went to a school right down the street, figuring it was handy, you know, and they told me I was hired, gave me the uniform, and never called me back.
So, wow. So
yeah, I was out of work for 6 weeks, and, you know, no unemployment because I was a contractor.
Right.
So I finally found something, and, you know, I just have 12 hours, which isn't enough, but it's better than nothing. I'm hoping it's going to work into more.
So you're not unemployed, but you're underemployed, it sounds like, Elizabeth.
Right, right. I'm just trying to right now prove, you know, what I'm made of. And I really only need 20 hours because I'm on disability.
You know, Elizabeth, thank you for calling. And Alex, what this raises in my mind, here's, you said there are a number of ways to tackle this problem. Here's Elizabeth. You know, she's underemployed, but maybe that gives her a leg up that she's doing at least something. What do you think?
Well, hopefully that's the case. Hopefully the 12 hours a week that she's getting will help her either in that job increase her number of hours or give her some experience that she can parlay into to another job that's part-time or full-time. This is a hard story, obviously, on a couple of grounds. First of all, it's unfortunate that Elizabeth's not eligible for unemployment benefits at all. There's a question about why that may be the case, and sometimes that happens when people are work inside a home, although it shouldn't be that case. It should be that she was eligible for unemployment benefits. But to the question that you asked about what kinds of alternatives might help people, you know, again, there's no simple solution here, but there have been ideas that have been floated. One by a colleague of mine here at the American Enterprise Institute, Michael Strain, he suggested a wage subsidy along with a reduction in the minimum wage. And so obviously we're having a big debate in Washington about increasing the minimum wage. But what Michael Strain's suggesting as an idea would be if the minimum wage is a barrier for some people to get back to work, one idea might be to target for those who are long-term unemployed a lower minimum wage matched up with a federal wage subsidy. We have the earned income tax credit for some low-income workers, but a federal wage subsidy might help boost their wages while lowering the barrier for employers to choose to hire workers who've been long-term unemployed. I think that's an interesting idea. Again, I don't think it's a solution, but I think something like that might help some people get back to work.
Well, and before we go back to our listeners, I did want to get your thoughts, Alex, on the research that Professor Dickens' graduate student did showing a pretty severe stigma among employers toward those who've been unemployed longer than 6 months. This automatic rejection by these computer programs at, you know, 11 o'clock at night. Clearly no human being is looking at this.
Sure. I have a strong opinion about that work. That work is really, really great and important. That work has gotten a lot of attention in Washington, as Professor Dickens described. He is turning out excellent graduate students, and I think he's doing yeoman work in helping at least some individuals end up in the workforce. But in all seriousness, that research really has gotten a tremendous amount of attention. It's been written about in editorial pages all across the country. A lot of labor market economists have studied that research. You know, one of the things that's difficult for any economist who's trying to study public policy is to get their hands on good data. You know, if, especially if you're a graduate student and you're tasked with trying to do something that no one's ever done before, if the data is the same data that everyone else has always used, it's really a difficult task. But what this research does is it generates new data. It's a natural experiment, and it's really exciting and it's important. And then the question is you know, what can we do to help these people with new public policy ideas? But the first step is to understand what is causing some of this problem, and this research helps illuminate that.
Well, Elizabeth, good luck to you in your job search. And let's go next to George in Dunbarton. Hi, George, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning. I wanted to know, I've never heard anybody address the abuse of the unemployment insurance system by employers, not the employees, but the employers who like the Department of the Census or the Projectionist Union in New York City, they hire more people than they need, and then what they do is they make them work for the minimum number of weeks that they can get unemployment insurance. Then they lay them off for 6 months and then rehire them so that they have a constant pool of employees, but the unemployment system, the insurance system, is paying the fee. You understand what I'm saying?
I do, I think, George, although, Professor Dickens, I have to say I haven't heard as much about this as the other type of abuse that some allege by workers who maybe don't need unemployment benefits, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But have you heard of this type of abuse, Professor Dickens?
I have personal experience with it.
Wow, okay.
My wife, but nothing else. So I have no idea how prevalent it is, but my wife was laid off from a cardiology nurse, and she was laid off from a hospital 30 years ago and then called back to work once every week and a half or so for one day in order to spoil her unemployment insurance. And we filed an appeal with the Unemployment Insurance Commission and in California and got nowhere with it.
I see. So they make her almost unemployed but not quite, so they don't have to pay her? Is that what's going on?
Yeah. There's certain rules about when you become eligible for unemployment insurance, and you have to accept any work that's available. And if you haven't been unemployed for a long enough period of time, you don't qualify, or you have to go through the reapplication process again. And they were doing it so that essentially they never had to pay. She never counted as being unemployed against them, so that their unemployment insurance didn't go up. And unfortunately for her, it meant she didn't get any unemployment. It only took her about a month to find another job, though. So
yeah,
and I was working, so it wasn't a big problem for us.
Well, that's an interesting illustration of what George is talking about.
Yep.
Well, here's an email from Andy, who kind of looks at this from the other side of the abuse ledger, if we could put it that way. Andy says, my many years as a small business owner have made it clear that if benefits were administered in the way they were intended, we would have plenty of money for those legitimately in need of assistance. We have had people who've committed felonies in the workplace, people who just stopped showing up, and people who by their own admission are making no effort to find a job. All were granted benefits by NHES, that's New Hampshire Employment Security, benefits that should be offered to people in legitimate need. So, Alex, there's the other side of it. What do you think?
Yeah, there certainly are, you know, issues on both sides of the ledger of improper payments, and there's been some oversight of these programs about how rigorous the states are in investigating the legitimacy of a claim. One thing that's important to make clear is that the unemployment insurance benefits are available for those who lose their job through no fault of their own. And so we're a little bit talking about two separate populations. One population we've been discussing is the long-term unemployed. Among those could be people who had 6 months or 7 months ago quit their job. Those people would not be eligible at any point for unemployment insurance benefits.
Yeah, if you quit, you don't get unemployment.
That's right. If you quit or if you're fired.
Yeah, so if you commit a felony, you're not going to get unemployment insurance.
That's right. You should not be eligible for unemployment insurance benefits. It's if the firm is contracting, if it goes out of business, if there are layoffs, that's when when someone becomes eligible for benefits.
All right.
But that said, you know, there are certainly people who are fired who then go and file claims for unemployment benefits. And there's a system in place to catch those, but that system may not always work perfectly.
Let's take another call. This is Kevin in Manchester. Hi, Kevin. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I was wondering if your guests could comment on the recent CBO study about the impact of the Affordable Care Act in reducing the amount of labor. And I'm a business owner. I've talked to a lot of business owners. Seems like that's a common thread from most people I talk to that has had an impact. And, you know, it's a trade-off. We're getting maybe more health care for more people, but it's reducing the amount of labor and work being done. Seems like that is something that's had an impact.
Well, and
on
Kevin,
unemployed.
It's a great question. Can I ask you one, if you don't mind?
Sure.
As an employer, how do you feel about this long-term unemployment issue, the idea of stigma against those who've been unemployed for a long period of time? What do you think?
I think there's probably some merit to it in general. I mean, I kind of agree with the prior business owner who called in who said, you know, you look at everybody and you got to dig a little deeper, but sometimes it may be hard. That, you know, if employers get 100 resumes, you know, they may just skip through some and not take the time. But,
sure.
You know, I think there's probably some merit to it. But, you know, if a good employer is going to try to weed through it and figure out who's the best, but that's sometimes it's just a matter of the speed and efficiency, they may skip over one. But I think there's probably some merit to it.
Kevin, thank you very much. Yeah, thanks for calling in. And what do you think, Professor Dickens, this CBO study that showed that the more access people had to health care, the more they might make that decision to withdraw from the workplace. How does that play into this long-term unemployment discussion that we're having?
I don't know that it does, because, first of all, what the CBO was talking about, and it was initially poorly portrayed in the media, is not employers cutting out the number of jobs, but they were talking about workers deciding not to work as much, possibly shifting to part-time, possibly quitting, because the only reason they were working was to get, or the only reason they were working full-time was to get on to get health insurance. So, you know, we're talking about perhaps someone with a family who wants to cut back to 20 hours, but if they do that, they'll lose their health insurance. And under the new program, they would have options out besides having to get the insurance through their employer and would allow them to do that. So what we'd be talking about is people who would be voluntarily leaving the labor force, and that as Dr. Brill has said, you don't get unemployment insurance if you do that.
I want to ask you one more question too, Alex, a little bit different from our caller's question. As we hear about the struggles of the long-term unemployed, we also hear repeated concerns from manufacturers here in New Hampshire anyway about the skills gap, that they've got great jobs waiting but not the right people to fill them. What's your take, Alex, on this apparent supply and demand mismatch?
I think it's an important issue, and I think it's one of the factors that we need to look at is the adequacy of the skills in the workforce, both for those who are long-term unemployed and in general, those who are coming out of high school or out of college and asking the questions if they have the right skill set for the jobs that are being created in the economy today. This is always an issue to some extent. There always are employers who can't find the exact types of employees that they need. But we want to make sure that our education system and our job training programs are adequate and available and affordable and well-designed so that people who are trying to make a transition from one type of career into another are able to go out and get the types of skills that we have. Obviously, if we look back over the last couple of years, we saw a lot of job loss in the construction sector, right, in the housing sector generally. We've seen a considerable amount of job growth in the healthcare sector. Well, it's not a very simple activity to switch someone from one industry from the construction industry into the healthcare industry. It's not impossible, but it can be a challenge depending on the worker's background and circumstances. And so we will always have some degree of job mismatch, and then the question is what type of job training programs do we have to help alleviate that?
Let's take one more call. Tim's waiting in Durham. Hi, Tim. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello. I guess we hear lots of talk about long-term unemployment. And they usually talk in terms of what the job seekers are doing. That it seems to be something employers are, you know, are eager to hire people, but those job seekers just aren't seeking jobs correctly. So why is the dialogue always on what the job seekers are doing when, in fact, this is a process that where the employers definitely have the upper hand, and where employers often do things that aren't particularly logical, such as eliminating everybody who's been out of work more than 6 months, you know. So, like, somebody can be a good candidate if they've been over for 6 months, and then a month later, suddenly they're worthless. Anyway, so the basic question, though, is why is it always based on what the jobs – why do we always talk only about what the job seekers are doing and not what's happening on the employer side?
Well, and, Tim, thanks for raising the point. You know, Professor Dickens, we do hear that corporate America is sitting on piles of cash, the headlines say. So why aren't they hiring more people and investing in that training?
They can't sell the products. This is, you know, this I would argue is the main reason why we've had the prolonged recovery that we've had, why we aren't back to full employment yet, is that we have inadequate aggregate demand. And again, what I would do is I would use the fiscal tools, tax cuts, and also there are lots of ways to spend money very quickly and very effectively increasing jobs. One of your callers earlier mentioned layoffs of municipal workers. There are a lot of state and local governments that are still very strapped for funds right now, and if we were to make transfers from the federal government to the state and local governments, we could very quickly put a whole bunch of people back to work and then get that money circulating through the economy and creating more demand.
Well, Alex Brill, real quickly to you, what's your final message to someone listening today who is in this predicament of long-term unemployment?
I think, you know, this was a great discussion. Unfortunately, we're seeing a lot of politics permeate this debate in Washington. What was nice about this conversation is we really talked and focused on the policy. Hopefully, Washington will start to focus more intensely on policy solutions, whether it be, you know, sort of the demand side policies that Professor Dickens was talking about, or more supply side type ideas. But really, I think that there's a serious challenge for those who are long-term unemployed, and hopefully some new solutions can be brought forth to the debate.
Well, Alex, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Alex Brill, Research Fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. And Professor Dickens, thank you also for taking the time out for us today.
My pleasure.
That's William Dickens, Professor and Chair of the Department of Economics at Northeastern University. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producers are Ellen Grimm and Faith Mikesell. Our intern is Nate Graby. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoi.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoi, and tomorrow on The Exchange, we begin a two-part series on the teaching profession with a look at how we prepare our teachers. After criticism that credentialing standards are too lax, many states, including New Hampshire, are trying to raise the bar and turn out more qualified teachers. Some say more in-classroom experience is key, for example, but there are challenges to such changes. Send us your thoughts by email or Facebook and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio with the Diane Rehm Show, next at 10 o'clock. Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from Service Credit Union, striving to be not too big and too small to meet the needs of all-size New Hampshire business. More at servicecu.org/business. And from Great Glen Trails Outdoor Center, offering cross-country skiing, snowshoeing, snow tubing, and daily winter tours to Mount Washington's tree line aboard the snow coach. GreatGlenTrails.com.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord, 89.1.
WEVS Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN Keene,
90.7.
WEVC Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
It's 10 o'clock.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Diane Rehm. Retail health clinics are becoming increasingly popular with consumers. Drugstore giants CVS and Walgreens are among those picking up on the trend. Both companies are ramping up the numbers of in-store clinics staffed by nurse practitioners.